in a world full of straight people. Aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? RuPaul's Drag Race, say the best drag queen wins. And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
Dave, happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. How's it going so far?
Is that time. We're recording this just after Thanksgiving. This will come out around Christmas time, I think. It's a very, very holiday-themed episode. Love to hear about everybody's Thanksgiving, but let's bring in our guest, a returning favorite. He's the writer and producer of the new horror comedy, It's a Wonderful Knife, which is a wonderful movie. That's my pun. And it's also a truth.
I like that.
Michael Kennedy.
I get it.
Welcome back.
Thanks, Michael guys. Kennedy. It's good to be
How
here.
How are you?
Good. It's good to see you.
How was your Thanksgiving?
Good. We hosted, we did like an orphan, gay orphan Thanksgiving at our place this year.
It's the best kind.
So it was nice. Yeah. It was like nine of us cooked a turkey. It was fun.
Okay. What was the standout dish?
That's a really good question. We had three different kinds of potatoes. And all three of them were fabulous. But I think my friend Keith made scalloped potatoes, and they were so wonderful. They were so good. So that was a standout.
What are your cooking skills, Michael?
Pretty good.
Yeah. Oh.
I love to cook. Yeah. I cook the turkey. I do a homemade stuffing whenever I make a turkey. Do a homemade gravy. I love to cook.
You cook the turkey.
I love to cook, and I love to cook for people.
That's very impressive. It seems like so much pressure.
It is, in a way, because you don't want to dry it out. Turkeys get dried.
Yeah,
dried out so easily now, and they cook really fast compared to how they used to. So there's like a high risk of drying the thing out, but I didn't this year, so it was great.
Bravo.
Well done. Well done.
Dave, did you have turkey? Guys. What was your Thanksgiving?
We had turkey, yeah. We had friends over in the backyard. Ben did the turkey. Nice. I did the stuffing. I did the one of the potato dishes. You know, there was a potluck element. People brought green bean casserole, cranberry, etc. We had everything that we needed, and it was absolutely delicious.
And you spearheaded the cooking.
Yeah, I mean, it was a team effort. We were a strong duo. Ben was on turkey, and he did great. He really did well.
I'm so impressed.
And we've been eating leftovers for a week, and I love it.
Turkey should be eaten more than once a year.
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't
know if you can hear my dogs barking, so I'm hoping she's not getting picked up too much here.
Great.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if you can hear my dog, but.
Bring them in. I'd love to chat with them, too. You know I'm a big dog fan.
Yeah.
I know you have two very Bandit. Cute ones.
My puppy she's insane. She's so funny. She's barking at the gardener.
Oh, wow. Wait, you have two?
Sweet kid.
Yeah, we got a second dog in the summer, like early in the summer. We got a second dog, so now we have two, yeah.
Scooby is your
Scooby's elder. My baby, my first one, and then Bandit is the new one.
Great names.
Yeah, good names for the dog. Scooby Strode is Scooby's full name.
Wow, of course.
Wow.
He's a member of the Strode family, yeah.
Obviously.
How did Scooby take to having a sister?
The first week was a little rough, actually. We thought we were so focused on bringing the puppy in. She was 4 months old when we adopted her. And we thought she'd have a hard time. And she adjusted pretty much right away. And for about the first week, though, Scooby didn't want anything to do with her. I think she was like, she knew right away too when we brought her in that wasn't a friend's dog or anything, that this was a different situation. And for like, yeah, for like the first week, she was like, my life has been destroyed. Cause she had such like, she had like such a, her own little routine and stuff. And it got completely upended by the puppy, but now they're like, they're besties. It's so fun watching them.
Oh,
like hang out and do stuff together. And every once in a while, Scooby still has like the big sister attitude. It's really funny watching dogs interact with each other that like live together. They have like a definite relationship.
Yeah. There can't not be an alpha. And when there's two dogs, right? I mean, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were told by our vet when we first brought Bandit home that you're supposed to treat your first dog like they're the queen or the king based on their gender, and that it's supposed to be lifelong that way, because one of them needs, the one that was there first needs to know that they're not replaced and that they're in charge of the other one, which I thought was interesting. So yeah, he even go as far as like, he was like, feed her first, put her collar on first, put her leash on first, let her walk out the door first, like all these things. So we do that, but yeah, they get along really well. It's really fun.
I've got doggy fever real bad right now.
Like, I bet you do. Where does that stand, Matt?
I'm actively looking. It's just tricky because when every time I'm like trolling Instagram, all the rescues, I'll reach out. And then once the conversation starts, they're like, when can you meet? And I'm like, I'm in New York right now as we're recording, and I'm going to be away a couple more times before Chris. So I'm like, in a month, can we meet? And they're like, no, like we're trying to move these dogs. And I'm not expecting anybody to hold them for me. But anyway, I'm actively looking. I did have one meeting with a very, very cute, actually Frenchie, who is with the rescue right before I came to New York. And I loved her. But when I went over to the foster mom's house to meet the dog, she had two of her own dogs there. I didn't know I kind of didn't know if those were also rescues. There were three dogs run up to me, and the other two, I was ready to take home. They unfortunately were not up for adoption. They were her dogs. They were her children, basically. And I swear it did cross my mind, like, what if I just asked her casually, like, what if you kept the one you're fostering? I took one of yours off. I didn't ask. True. Anyway, we're looking. Yeah. By New Year's Eve, I'm sure we will have taken somebody home.
Okay.
Aww. And if you don't...
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you don't, after the new year, all these people are going to be returning puppies they got for their children.
That's true.
So,
God damn, you know,
rescue a dog who gets rehomed, needs to be rehomed.
Yeah, that's true.
There is a weekly dog adoption fair on Larchmont. Mm. And I've been doing my little Sunday errands, stopping by Levan Bakery, et cetera. And there is one specific dog named Penny. She's very small and she's very scared. Like, she's at the adoption fair and she's super freaked out. And she, like, you know, has attached to a few dogs and she's watching them get played with by potential owners. And she's just looking and shaking. And I love her so much. And I'm, you know, we're always kind of thinking about a little brother or sister for Finbar, who doesn't want one. But it's like, this one is so sweet. And I just want to, you know, I want to bring, you know, the pal out of her, you know, I want to ease her mind. So I don't know. We're thinking about it.
I think if you do what Michael's saying and Finn gets to be the king of the castle, he might like having a little underling.
Yeah. You know, we've been dog sitting here and there for our friend Irene, who has a little Havanese, and that dog loves Finn. And like always wants to play, and Finn is like, I don't know what this thing is that you brought into my home for the first day. And then after that, he starts playing. Yeah. Then he's like, oh, this is right. This is who I am. This is what I do, and whatever. And then they start to have fun. So it can happen.
Michael, we're gonna get into the holiday movie of the year, obviously. But first, I just want to know, like, your holiday plans coming up. What's in store?
My husband and I are flying to Cleveland, Ohio for 4 days to visit my family. We do it every year. Did hearts just move from my head?
How did those hearts? Does Riverside do that on its own? Listener, Michael scratched his head and then a flurry of hearts, heart emojis emerged, animated. I'm going to try to do what you did.
So funny.
Presumptuous of this app. To assume that anyone would naturally want
it
that.
It was magic.
Maybe the app heard the word Cleveland and was just like heart emoji, you know?
Yeah. We're all trying to recreate it.
I know, we're all trying to do it now. So we're flying back for like 4 days to visit my family in Cleveland. We do it every year. I have six siblings. So we have a huge Christmas and it's a lot of fun actually. So we do Christmas Eve at my brother's and then Christmas Day at my sister's. And there's usually like, let's see, 28 people in my immediate family. It's my six siblings, their spouses, and then their four, between them, they have 14 kids.
Wow.
So it's wild. It's intense.
Where are you in the six sibling birth order?
I'm seven of seven.
Oh, so you're seven of seven. Wow, the baby.
Seven of seven. Wow. So I'm the baby. So we fly out on the 23rd and we fly back on the 27th. It's fun. Christmas Eve, brothers, Christmas at sisters, and then we do family bowling on the 26th every year.
And for so many people, that is a pretty tight schedule you're keeping, which I do it the same way, so no judgment. But are you getting a lot of flack for kind of getting in and out?
No, I don't. You know, I used to from my dad every once in a while, but he passed away in 2018. And my mom, when my mom was still alive, I used to go for at least a week. And sometimes my husband would come for the whole time, or sometimes he'd meet me there and stuff. But yeah, when my parents were alive, I used to go for a lot longer of a time. But now I actually go home more often. Because I can finally afford to fly a couple times a year, whereas before it was usually just once a year. So yeah, my siblings are also like by the time the 27th rolls around, they're like, get the fuck out of my face. We've been together for 7 years straight. So yeah.
It's a lot.
It's really fun though, and we stay in a nice hotel in downtown Cleveland when we're there, where all the lights are and stuff. So it's actually pretty sweet.
The hotel is key.
Awesome. Matthew, are you in town?
I'm going to be in New York. I'm in New York now. I'm coming home for a week to LA, coming back to New York. We're actually going to Hawaii a lot of family time right before the holidays. So instead of doing that, we're taking a trip coming back to LA by Christmas Eve. So everything will be over, and then we'll just be in LA, just kind of hanging out, seeing some friends, seeing all the movies.
Fantastic.
What have you seen all lately, Michael? Cool.
Thanksgiving.
Let's talk about it. Okay, so nice. Fun.
It was so great. It's so fun. It's so fun. Dave, did you see it?
No.
That's
not I don't like to watch people get cut up. I don't like it. I can't do it. I can't do the slasher genre at all. Can't do it. It just makes me sad.
Makes you sad, huh? Well, Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Thanksgiving is brutal. It's really
so funny.
Funny. Like, I never go to the movies by myself. My husband Michael was gone, and I did a double feature alone of Thanksgiving and Priscilla, a very odd combination.
Wow. Oh, interesting.
Really liked both.
Wow.
Yeah, Thanksgiving, so much fun. I feel like that could be the beginning of a little franchise, right?
I hope so. It was actually a pretty good story, I thought, too. Like, I really liked the main girl. And I love Patrick Dempsey. I thought he was really good in it. Did you have like the one moment with the Gina Gershon thing towards the end that made you cackle really loud? Do you know what I'm talking about? Can I spoil it? I mean, Dave's listen, not
spoiler alert, everybody, for the end of Thanksgiving. Go ahead, one minute now if you don't want it spoiled. But yes, Michael, go ahead.
Yes. So when they talk about Gina Gershon being pregnant.
Oh my God. Yes. I was like, what is he talking about? Like, she died. It was so sad. Like, yes.
She's 60, and yeah, she's 61 years old, and her character was
And it's like, no wonder he was so upset. It's like, this was a miracle that she was pregnant.
Yes.
And then
it's so great, and it's so campy. The theater went nuts when that happened. I was in, it was a pretty full theater, and I saw it at the Grove, so there was a lot of game in there. Sure. And it was just the noise that happened when that reveal was revealed was so great. I love the horror movies for that reason, like just seeing them with the crowd.
Well,
so fun.
I mean, this is a natural segue to It's a Wonderful Knife, because a lot of people on the internet are sort of like just celebrating both of those coming out around the same time, two sort of holiday horror comedies that are both so much fun and just like the perfect double feature. I did a stranger double feature with Priscilla, but I'm very inspired by your career. We've talked a couple times on here because, you know, I'm a horror nerd too, and it's heartening to see one of the good guys not only get a movie made, which is already so impossible, but to get on.
It's hard.
You're on a roll now where you'll hopefully be making many more for years to come after, it seems, a period of time where you really didn't know if this was going to work.
Yeah, I mean, there was a good 4 or 5 years there where I had worked on a TV show and I was a writer on a TV show and the show got canceled and then I didn't work as a writer for like 5 years. I like went back to a production job and really was starting to wonder if I was even making the right decision with my life. But I ultimately, like, thank God for ignorance, because I was just like too stupid to like really know how much more work it was going to be before things started to pop. But I also felt like I didn't know anything else to do. I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm not going to move home and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was tough. So yeah, I appreciate that. It's been really nice the last couple of years. These little bit of success and producing a movie now too has kind of opened some doors for me as well. So it's been really nice. It's a nice, I found my lane. That was like the thing that was most important, is like I found where I belong, where I wanted to be as far as writing goes. So I was trying to put myself in like boxes that didn't necessarily like want me even, you know, and that I really didn't belong in. So once I finally figured out like what it really truly was that I wanted to do, it's been really nice.
So what is that lane?
Lane is like a weird horror comedy, emotional. It's got like, yeah, it's like kind of the, I always call it the Chris Landon genre. Like, it's, he's probably like the best example of the person that does this stuff. And thankfully I get to work with him about 75% of the time still. But it's, it, for me, I love to delve into this genre of horror that has a tinge of comedy, but also has a lot of heart. And I think a lot of horror movies forget the heart. You know, I've had a couple people tell me that It's a Wonderful Knife is the most wholesome, heartwarming slasher really? They've ever seen. And that's kind of really great to hear, because it's really what I was going for on this movie. So yeah, that's kind of my lane, is kind of mixing genres together, or even like an old movie with an old idea with like a new face, I guess is what you could say on a movie.
So what are your thoughts on the latest Scream movies and what's happening with Scream 7?
Let's disclosure, Michael's flying a little close to the sun with that project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chris is, you know, attached to direct it. He's like one of my best friends. So I, as far as the new movie goes, the thing that I really, 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 really hate about it is just the vitriol Chris has gotten just by being his name being attached to the project. When everything went down with Melissa and that kind of stuff, you know, he's really made me feel, he's like, Matt, you mentioned like a good things happening to good people, and Chris Landon is bar none, probably the greatest person I've ever worked with. And he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever know. He's caring, he's giving, he's kind, he's hilarious. He's a great dad, great husband. And people are treating him on the internet like he's the Antichrist just because he's the director on this thing and acting like he pulls every lever that happens with these movies, even before the movie's even made. And watching him get death threats and fans calling his phone number somehow and people commenting on his children and commenting on photos of his dead mother and all this stuff. It like, I actually like, could cry talking about it because I love him so much. And I'm just like, how is this happening to someone who's so good? So yeah, not only am I flying close to the sun because he's involved, but I have like such an emotional reaction when I think about what's happening to him, because like, he doesn't deserve any of that. But on the other, on the happier side, I really enjoy the fifth and sixth movie. I think they're both, I think they're really fun. I think they have, I enjoy six more than five, because I really love what Melissa Barrera did in part six. And I also love what Radio Silence did. Like, it's Scream 6 is a Radio Silence movie. Whereas like, I felt Scream 5, and they've said this to me before, they felt like they had to like kind of play in Wes's house a little bit and almost act like they were Wes Craven to kind of make the movie palatable to people in this way. And once they got that under their belt, they could kind of do their thing, which is what I really love about Six. And I really love the new cast.
I do too. And it's like, obviously it was devastating when we lost Neve Campbell from Six, and now losing half of the new sort of core four. And I'm like, one of the only good ingredients we know we still have is Chris Landon directing. I'm like, fucking leave him alone before another piece of this falls apart. I mean, because I think the only way they can make any lemonade out of these lemons is to give a lot more money to Neve Campbell and give her what she deserves to get her back and hopefully get Matthew Lillard in there. Yeah. Like, there's just going to be a big void where the other two once were.
Yeah. And I honestly do hope, though, that like the studio and Melissa talk, you know, I think there's an opportunity for those sides to kind of come together and kind of maybe talk about some stuff non-movie related with everything, because I don't know. I feel like both sides could learn from each other in a really, really great, effective way, as opposed to just having animosity. You know, I think it's a good moment for, I think, a lot of people to see too, if they do come together in some sort of way of a conversation or something to, I don't know. It just reminded me that, like, and it's not the situation that's going on overseas or anything. It's just, we've become so black and white about everything. And I'm hoping these two sides that have worked together for the last 3.5 years can maybe have some sort of conversation and come to an understanding with each other about just emotional feelings and the way they view the world and that kind of stuff. It could teach a lot of people that, like, you can still interact and maybe have a productive conversation. Right.
If these two dogs can work it out.
Yeah. I mean, if they can bark at the guy on the sidewalk.
Anything's
together.
Possible.
Yeah. So I kind of want to address the elephant in the room right now, which is that we are all dressed exactly the same.
Oh my God, you're right. You two even more than I.
We are all dressed exactly the same.
Michael and Dave both.
You're doing an upscale take gray on what we're
sweatshirts,
all wearing.
Crew necks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got a pocket.
Okay, so Michael's got a pocket and he's got kind of.
Okay, I don't have a pocket.
The like kind of vintagey looking stitching, but they both have the there's a cool name for this little V right here. I forget what that's called.
V. Mm-hmm.
That has a name.
This has a name
for clothes nerds, but I don't remember what it is. And my T-shirt has it too, and it's sort of gray, but it is a T-shirt, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Well, it looks cozy. We're all just cozy and gray on
a
cozy
and
gray
morning. It's a cozy gray.
Michael, will you indulge me a bit, like just sort of the steps of getting "It's a Wonderful Knife" made? Because so you're coming off the success of Freaky, which you talked about last time you were on the podcast. If people haven't seen it, you must see it. Vince Vaughn, Catherine Newton, it's awesome. But I'm assuming that experience made selling this one easier.
Actually not, to be honest with you, because what the weird thing about this movie is, I wrote it during the pandemic. So like we were in lockdown and I wrote it during lockdown and stuff. And, it went out before Freaky came out. So I hadn't yet kind of had the Freaky bump that I've had, that I had in my career post that movie. That movie, was crazily well received, much more than we thought it would be. And it really opened a lot of doors with a lot of people for me. But weirdly, I wrote this before and I quite frankly didn't think that would happen as far as Freaky was concerned, especially since it was coming out during a pandemic and stuff. So I wrote this on spec. I wrote it myself. And then I partnered with this guy, Adam Hendricks, who produced Freaky for Jason Blum. And said, "Do you want to make this movie with me?" And he said, "Yeah." So it kind of went out to studios and everyone passed like pretty quickly. And then, so I was kind of like, I got to go back to the drawing board a little bit, maybe work on the script. So I did that a little bit. And then I took it to my friend, Sam Zimmerman over at Shudder. And they were like, "We're going to make it." So that's kind of how that happened. And so kind of was like purchased before Freaky came out. So yeah, it was like, we were jokingly talking about it, me and Adam recently, about like, I wonder what would have happened if we had taken this out, like waited a year, like it probably would have been a different situation. Oh, maybe, I don't know. Maybe people just hated the script, but yeah. So I wrote it during the pandemic, and then it took like a good 2 years to get it into production. It's been a long haul on this one. I've been there since day one. So it's been a long, long process with Knife to get it to script.
And it's obviously the title speaks for itself. Do you want to talk a little bit about what the concept is?
Yeah, so it's A Wonderful Knife is exactly, mm-hmm. I hope, what you think it is. It's a slasher play on It's a Wonderful Life. But instead of George Bailey, we have a 17-year-old girl named Winnie Carruthers, who is, living the pretty sweet life in a small town called Angel Falls, small mountain town. She's got a boyfriend. She's got a gay older brother who she's really close with, parents who she's really close with, her aunts who she's really close with. So they kind of have this Hallmarky, Christmassy kind of life in the beginning of the movie. But there's this miser dickhead played by Justin Long, which is perfect, awesome. Named Henry Waters, who is essentially this movie's version of Mr. Potter. He wants to own the whole town. And there's one man standing in his way of owning this whole town. And the man's drawing a hard line in the sand. He's like, I'm not giving you my property. I'm not selling you my property. I'm not letting you turn this town into basically shit. So Justin kills him, kills his granddaughter, and then goes to kill Winnie and her friends on Christmas Eve. And Winnie kills the killer 15 minutes into the movie and reveals it to be Justin Long. And she saves the day. So essentially the first 15 minutes is like a sped up like an entire slasher movie. But then you cut to a year later and Winnie's life is kind of shit. She has massive PTSD. You know, no one quite understands what she's going through, because even though she took down this horrible man, that's all anyone sees. But she's like, I literally fucking killed somebody. Like, I don't care if he was a bad guy, like killed someone. So she's struggling with that. And then she has all the teenage trappings of like the worst thing that could happen to a 17-year-old. Her boyfriend cheats on her. Her brother gets a truck for Christmas and she gets a tracksuit, and then she doesn't get into the college she wants to go to because she wants to go to New York and stuff. So she does what you're not supposed to do in a Christmas movie, and she wishes she was never born. When she does that, the wish comes true, and she's immediately plunged into a world where she realizes that because she wasn't around to kill the killer a year earlier, he's been killing for a straight year, and this town has completely turned to Biff Tannen Back to the Future 2 world. And all the kids are doing meth, and everyone's like living on the streets and stuff. So she finds herself in this really, really, really fucked up universe. And she needs to figure out a way to get, not only get back to her timeline, but also kill the killer. And so she goes to this, like the loser in her class is the only person that will help her and who believes her that like she was never been born and this whole stuff happened. So
It's very fun. It's such a wild ride, obviously. And it's on demand now, right?
December 1st. December 1st. It's on demand. It's on Shudder. It's on AMC Plus.
It's on all the things. Everybody go see it. Right. But I also want to hear about your experience producing. You mentioned, I think this is your first time producing one of your own screenplays.
Yeah.
Can you just explain like what that means and what it was like wearing your producer hat?
Yeah, it was fun. You know, it was kind of... when I partnered with Adam Hendricks on the movie, I kind of was just like, I want to produce this one too, but I've never produced anything. So can I just be with you guys the whole way through? And he was like, yeah, it'll be a good way for you to kind of just shadow us essentially. And then I ended up fucking producing the movie, because he got so busy. So he actually had to bring in somebody else and all this stuff, but it was really fun. The great aspect of it is I literally got to be involved in every decision made, from beginning to end. So I was involved in casting. I was involved in location scouting. I was involved in where we shot the movie. Contracts, like just as even paperwork and stuff. But on set, I was on set every single day, and I was in Canada for pre-production every day and stuff. And I really was the creative producer, more or less. You know, we had this guy, Seth Kaplan, who produced the movie too. And he was like really the money guy. And he was the guy that you know, was like looking at his watch going, all right, we have 20 minutes to shoot this scene before we were behind schedule and that kind of stuff. But I was really there to support the director and the actors. So it was really fun because I got to kind of have like a little acting troupe, like improv troupe, because we were kind of pitching each other stuff as we were shooting the movie. And it was a really nice, I was like an emotional shoulder for a lot of the actors too, because we had a grueling shoot. We shot over 18 days. We shot an entire movie over 18 days. So these long days, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how we did it. Looking back on it, I can't believe we had a movie to turn in, quite frankly. We had to cut a lot of corners, and I had to cut scenes during shooting and that kind of stuff. On paper, the ending was supposed to be this big, massive brawl in Public Square, and we had to completely rearrange that because we had about 6 hours to shoot the ending of the movie. So I was doing that kind of stuff too. I was doing creative cuts throughout shooting and stuff too. So yeah, creatively it was fun because I got to see the director kind of take my vision and do his own thing with it. And then in post, I was involved in every aspect of that too. It was music, sound design, all that stuff. So like, people will be like, how many times have you seen the movie now? And I'll be like 650, because I've seen like each cut about 400 times, you know, like, so it was fun though. It was really fun. It's a lot of work.
And do you feel like you're able to ride this success differently than you would have if this happened when you were like 22?
Oh yeah. I appreciate it a lot more, I think, than I would if I was younger. I had a lot of low points before this. And, you know, I think getting sober was probably like the biggest thing that made a difference too. And I don't think I would have done that as a 25 or 30 year old. It took me until I was in my mid 30s to realize like that I probably needed to put the alcohol down and really start focusing on my life and getting better mentally. So yeah, I don't think I would, because I've had so many low points that I have a lot of life experience to look back on and really appreciate what's happening. And stay a little humble, and also like just know it could go away tomorrow. You know, like I could never sell another thing starting tomorrow. So like, yeah, I really appreciate every second of it. And it's like a dream come true. Like I was on set one day crying, and someone's like, "Is everything okay?" And I'm like, "No." I'm like, don't you get emotional about this? Like, look at this. There's a whole world being made right here because of some stupid thing I put on Final Draft. It's wild to me. And I hope I feel that way every single time I make a movie, if I get to make more.
Do you know what's next? I think you have a Netflix movie coming soon. Is that right?
Yeah, they have a movie coming out on Netflix next year called Time Cut. And then, yeah, I have a bunch of things in the works. I really can't talk about any of them, but I'm doing another movie with Blumhouse, doing a movie with Chris Landon, and then I have a project at Screen Gem. So I have a lot going on right now, which is great. I'm really thankful. Like the Freaky Bump and then this movie has helped in a way, just as a producer, people are starting to see me a little bit differently, which is great. And I'm starting to meet people I probably wouldn't have met if I didn't produce this movie. So I have a lot of stuff in the hopper, which is great. Really great. Chris Landon and I are doing another slasher movie, which is really fun. I can't say much about it, but we're not doing like a, you know, a play on Freaky Friday or like Groundhog Day or anything like that. But we're actually, taking in an entire genre of film and putting a slasher movie inside it. And I'm really excited for people
to find out. I already love it, whatever it is. By the way, just noticed on IMDb that you've got a character in It's a Wonderful Life named Gail Prescott. Obviously, another homage to two horror queens.
Yes, Catherine Isabel plays her too.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Awesome. Michael Kennedy, happy holidays.
Thank you
for hanging out with us.
Love coming on the show. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. We'll coordinate
outfits again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, guys.
That is our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at HomophiliaPod. Homophilia is a World of Wonder production, music by Ben Wise. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.